Welcome to the Therapist Connect podcast. Dr. Peter Blundell interviews therapists about their work and experiences within the therapist community.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Therapist Connect podcast. My name's Dr. Peter Blundell, and today I'm interviewing Kaz Binstead, who is a therapist who works in private practice. Kaz is very busy as she sits on the BACP Private Practice Divisional Executive, and we are co-facilitators of Trainee Talk, which is a Twitter discussion group that happens every Monday between 2 and 3. And I'm really glad to welcome her to the podcast today.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, yeah.
So, should we crack on with some questions?
Let's go for it, yeah.
It's weird this bit, because we're normally used to chatting and then it goes a bit formal, isn't it? It's really weird.
It is a bit.
Well, my first question then was going to ask you, because you mentioned you wanted to talk about this a little bit. So, why did you decide that you wanted to become a therapist in the first place? Kind of what drew you to this as a profession?
Yeah, so it's quite interesting because I don't think I ever would have found therapy at all had I just kind of, if I think about my upbringing and the way my life was going. Yeah. So it's well, they always say, you know, things happen in life and there's always like difficult things maybe, but then there's good stuff that comes out of it. And certainly one of the good things that came out of what was a very, very difficult event that happened to me in my 20s was the discovery of therapy, first of all going to therapy, and then ultimately deciding to become a therapist. It was a very traumatic incident, which I'm thankful to be alive for. I think when I first went into therapy, it was kind of a bit alien to me, but the more that I went along with my own process and my own development, and the more that I thought about previous study that I'd done and how it kind of fitted in with philosophy and religion and how you look at the world, how human beings look at the world, I thought, yeah, you know, this is something I'm interested in. I guess it really, really feeds into my work now. I'm just interested in human beings. I love my work. I'm one of those therapists who will happily go kind of talk about how much I love my work. I do a very full practice and I'm happy with that, even though I do lots of other things. I know some people kind of will take on lots of other things and then as a result may see, you know, less clients or maybe not see clients at all. But for me, that's not really part of my understanding of what it is to be a therapist. So I take a lot from my own understanding of life, my own experiences of life and kind of, I guess, it's always there with me in my room and yeah.
Part of you. Yeah.
Part of me. Yeah. Yeah.
So how long ago was it that you qualified then? And what was the training that what were you trained in originally?
So, originally I trained in, it was officially a humanistic integrative course, but, we actually did psychodynamic as well, looked at object relations, stuff like that. So it felt a bit more like it was just an integrative course. And then after that, I've kind of gone on and done further training. I've done my supervision training as well. And yeah, so I still feel like I am very much an integrative practitioner, which I was actually talking to a friend the other week and I was quite relieved when I went to Mick Cooper's recent workshop on pluralism. I was quite relieved to see that there were other integrative therapists out there because all you hear about these days is pluralism. And I think that's like the new kind of integrative. And I suppose there's questions about what are the similarities, what are the differences, all of that. Interestingly, they started the seminar with the question, what modality are you? And they had all the modalities, and integrative wasn't on there. Mm-hmm. And so they said, if yours isn't on there, write it in the comment box. So I was like, that's a bit odd. So I kind of wrote it in the comment box, and loads of other people had written it. And then it was just interesting through the day, kind of interacting more with people who were trained in the modality that I was trained in, and that I still, I mean, I do work quite existentially, but I would still classify myself as, integrative.
Fantastic. And you mentioned there about kind of training over the years, kind of how do you think kind of training in CPD has evolved over the years? Because there's a lot of online stuff. Well, just in the past few months, there's been a lot of online stuff, hasn't there?
Yeah. I mean, it's just completely different. And I think this is a really good thing, what's come out. I mean, online events, all power to them, because, you know, they've been so generous, I think, with what they've offered over the lockdown. And one of the issues, I think, about CPDs is the money. And maybe we might talk a little bit about money more in this conversation. Yeah. In the profession. But, you know, I think it's really difficult for people to sometimes do all the extra training that they want to, and that obviously we know is very important as therapists. Because it can be quite a costly business. And I know that the membership bodies over the years have kind of changed their understanding of what CPD is, so that it includes things like reading and multitude of activities, actually. But I think there's a lot of change, and I think it will probably continue to change. I mean, I suppose in terms of longer term training, there's been a lot of change in that as well that I've seen over the years since I've been qualified. I think it's a minefield. I think it's really difficult maybe for people coming into the profession to know where to start with what they need to do to train. I think it's a good thing that there's many more universities now offering counselling and psychotherapy courses, which I think has grown over the years. I think it was probably much more kind of private colleges and stuff. But nothing's the same. Yeah. So I think it can be very confusing for people potentially. If you find the right course, it's great. And, you know, or if you do training and then you think, I want to do more training or whatever, and you have the means to do that, brilliant. But I know that that's not always accessible to everyone.
It's difficult, isn't it, as well, when you're starting out early on, and particularly if you don't have an appreciation of the different approaches to counselling and therapy, it can be quite confusing trying to understand or figure out where to start, really. I think it'd be quite challenging.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
If someone is listening to this and they were thinking about kind of starting out in the profession and starting their training, is there any advice that you would give to somebody?
What advice would I give to them? I'd say make sure you do your research in terms of your course. Talk to other therapists. That would be something I would say. Join Therapist Connect.
Perfect answer.
Shout out there to Therapist Connect. Because you'll learn more from therapists than you might kind of reading about stuff. For example, you know, like BACP accredited courses. I did a BACP accredited course, and I remember when I searched for courses, that was quite important that I did that, because I read that the BACP was the main body, and I'd read somewhere that's what you need to do. And I think it is important, but also we do know as therapists that actually there's no difference. Well, there is one difference, which is that if you do a BACP accredited course, you don't have to do certificate of proficiency exam if you want to be BACP registered. But apart from that, there's very little difference, actually. So, you know, I think if you talk to therapists, you can get a better understanding of that. I think also to have a understanding of the kind of the realities of the profession. And by that, I mean, you know, that this is a wonderful, wonderful career. I consider myself to be extremely lucky. I've worked since I qualified, basically. I never planned to go into private practice, but there wasn't really any jobs, so I did. And I'm one of the lucky ones. I've kind of got a full practice and it's been like that since I qualified. So, but I know through a lot of friends and colleagues and things that there is obviously a big difficulty with jobs in the profession. And for sure, there's nothing more frustrating than training, spending lots of hours and stuff to train in something that you may love and then not actually be able to do it when you qualify. So I think making sure that people know about the realities of the profession at the moment, or hopefully, you know, things are going to move on, fingers crossed. But and then the other thing I would say is therapy is, this is a cliche, but it's a journey, you know. It's not yeah. Like you have your therapy, you do your however many hours of therapy that you have to do in your course, and then you're all sorted and ready to go out and, you know, I don't know, tell people how to live or be like a mighty sage or something. Yeah. You know, you are learning all the time. And I would say personal therapy, for me, it's a really, really important part of therapy training. And also many qualified therapists spend their life dipping in and out of therapy when they need it themselves. And I think that's very, very important for many reasons. I mean, I think if we're sitting with clients and we're asking them to do things that maybe we've not experienced ourselves or we're not doing ourselves, I don't know what to think about that. But also it's about being a human being living in this life. And we are going to have things that are going to come up. And I mean, it's amazing when you first qualify. It's amazing and scary but when you first qualify, because you just learn so much about yourself. Yeah. And even when you kind of think, oh, you know, I've done all that work on myself, I know who I am, I know all that stuff from the past that's affected me and all of that. Actually, then you go on and then you get a client and you suddenly think, okay, what's this? Or, you know, so I would say make sure you take into account, the importance of that. And, again, I know in reality there are barriers to that, which again are financial, but, I think, you know, it is, in the ways that supervision is, it is kind of a necessary part, particularly for trainees.
Yeah, and it's key, isn't it? And also, like you were saying there is so many occasions I can think of where things surprise you, you know, in terms of things that you need to explore in your own personal therapy, things that you weren't expecting, and you never know how you're going to react to something, and that there's always opportunity for more growth and development, isn't there, throughout your whole career as a therapist. It's an ongoing journey, as you say. We've touched on this a little bit, but because I think I know what your answer might be to this, but what are the kind of challenges that you think that we face as therapists, or that you've maybe faced as a therapist coming into the profession? What are the kind of big challenges you think that we've got on our hands at the moment?
I mean, I suppose it does touch a little bit on some of the things that I've said on the previous question there. You know, it's funny because I work in a top floor in a building when I am working in my consulting room. And, you know, I go in and I work quite late. And I kind of sit with my clients and I'm just like, it's just me and the client. And, you know, I'm listening to them and I'm listening to what it means to be a human being and then finding meaning and everything. And I'm so like satisfied with my work, and I kind of, you know, and obviously, you know, all kinds of feelings from client work, but you know, on the whole, I'm feeling like, yeah, you know, I'm so happy that I'm here, in this place. But, then I kind of come out of my consulting room and go on Twitter or read terrible stories about people who have got no money, who are kind of, living on the breadline, going to food banks, stuff like that. These are qualified. These are my contemporaries, people who are qualified. And it makes me feel really sad. And I think that we absolutely have to be taking that on as a profession. We can't continue to just ignore it. And I know there are many people, and obviously, the Counsellors Together group have been a big part of this, raising awareness, actually, I think, over the past couple of years in particular. And I think it's about, you know, kind of recognising that people who spend money training and putting so many hours, you and I both know how many hours students put into their training, that they are qualified and they do deserve to be kind of given a chance to work. I know some people say, oh, you know, you're not entitled to a job. Well, no one's entitled to a job, but actually if you do kind of train in a profession, you do expect that there's a chance that you can get a job. And I think that there's all kinds of, we won't even have time today to talk about all the kind of systemic and problems within the profession that leads to this, but we know obviously there are agencies who use free counsellors, and some of those agencies are, you know, behaving in a very ethical way and maybe are helping trainees and things like that. And maybe other companies are making a lot of money off people who are working for free. I've never actually become accredited myself as a silent protest. I thought I was like the only one in the whole profession who didn't agree with accreditation for many years. And then I met Maria and she was kind of like, oh, this is my group. And I was like, oh, I'm not the only one. Because I do think, I mean, if you want to do accreditation, that's great. And I mean, I could be kind of senior accredited now if I wanted to be, but I choose not to be because, around the time, in the progression of my career, the register has come out, which obviously wasn't there before. Accreditation was needed before the register was there, but the register is there now. And I am a big supporter of the register. So for me, actually, I think sometimes we have to, take a stand on some things. And, I think that, you know, people who qualify and are registered, yes, they've still got a lot of development, as we've just talked about. And they can get support on that through their supervisors. The supervisors are there for, from hopefully membership bodies as well, in certain areas, like private practice, which is obviously what I've been interested in. So I think that's a big issue. I think the other issue, is just on a nationwide, level, in terms of our provision and, provision of counselling and psychotherapy to members of the public. I quite often find myself tweeting, "We are here," you know, because it's almost like we've just kind of ignored. And I know that some of that comes back to, you know, some of those difficulties within the profession. And this is why it's really important that discussions are going on and that discussions continue to go on, because, you know, it's no good at the moment. The way I see it is in some ways our profession isn't working for therapists. And in some ways, our profession isn't working for clients. And that's no good, really. You know, that's a good sign that actually something needs to change. Evolve and that, yeah, change, exactly. And that we need to be having those discussions to enable that change. Because, I mean, it's great. I live in Southwest London, and people can come and see me, and my practice is constantly full. there's a lot of people seeking therapy in some parts of England. And those, I mean, I live in a place where people can afford to pay private therapy. Mm-hmm. So in a way that helps me as, you know, maintain my own living and do what I love doing. And it also helps those people who, you know, maybe, I mean, at one point in Lambeth here, the NHS waiting list was about 6 months, I think. I think I'm right in that. I know that it can be, Wandsworth is much less, but, you know, and again, that can differ from place to place. But if you need mental health, help, you kind of need it straight away and it needs to be available.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the difficulties. And I think what frustration for me is trying to make sure that actually as a group of people, therapists are engaged together and talking about some of these issues and that actually you can make a difference. You know, if we all work together, actually we can create change within the profession, but it means people need to be engaged in those discussions and kind of trying to make a difference. And I'm glad that some of these groups on social media that have been set up now are kind of helping people to access those discussions a lot more so that people could be a bit more educated about the different situations that counselling faces over the next few years.
Definitely, yeah, completely agree with everything you say.
So there's some of the challenges. What about some of the rewards then that you feel that you that you have as a therapist? What have those, some of those been for you?
Well, I mean, as I've said, I love my job, so you can't ask. That's a good starting point. Not everybody loves their job.
That's
so
true.
A good place to start. But I think it's very rewarding for me having, you know, just worked pretty much full time in my practice, sitting with people who are human beings like me and struggling, and it's quite something actually. I think the work that we do, some of those people won't have talked to anybody before maybe about things, so to just be able to kind of hear another person and help them work out whatever it is they need to work out, you know, about what's going on for them, you know, and, you know, and to really just see life. I mean, you can categorize things. You can say, you know, people have issues with or difficulties with anxiety or depression. And I mean, I tend to think, I'm kind of a bit in both camps. I don't think I don't really agree with the whole kind of, that's your word, you know, and, let's work on depression or whatever, but I do think that they can be quite useful in describing what someone is going through. And actually sometimes for clients, they like to have that description. It helps them to have that description. But also, you know, it's just that life is happening, and you know, whether it's something that's happened a while ago that's maybe been buried, whether it's a bereavement, I kind of work with I work a lot with people with high levels of anxiety and difficulties with their self-esteem, and also with bereavements. They're my kind of main areas. I mean, I've worked with everything, but, you know, that's what I like to work with. You know, these things happen, and sometimes it takes people completely unawares, and, you know, they might say, I didn't think I'd be here. And I think one of the really good things is, although maybe the provision isn't there, one thing that is changing in society is less stigma around seeking therapy. It's great that, you know, people will come. I see a lot of people in their 20s and 30s, and they, you know, they'll say, oh, my friend recommended that I came or whatever, and many more men as well. You know, which I think is you know, I just think it's really, really important that it can be something that is, just seen as okay, just seen as like a part of life. And why wouldn't you, in the same way that you kind of exercise, why wouldn't you, you know, just be with yourself, connect with yourself and find your truth, I guess.
It's interesting, isn't it, how so many more people are becoming aware of that possibility and aware that kind of therapy is out there and open to that. And as you were kind of saying before, but the real disconnect that there is there with actually the lack of jobs and employment out there for therapists and counsellors, but actually the need is, you know, there is so many people out there who are now open to it and want to actually access that support. So it's never been more in our conscious awareness, I think, as a group of people. But there's some difficulties there in people being able to access it, I think.
Definitely. Yeah. And I mean, one of the other things that I really enjoy doing is I really enjoy, I've enjoyed working with students, but I really enjoy working with newly qualified as well. Because, you know, I think when you get to a certain place in your own career and you can give back, it's good to give back. And, you know, I feel quite passionate about helping, people who, you know, maybe in their latter stages of training and going into particularly maybe private therapy or even not private therapy, but just that kind of beginning journey. Again, you know, because when you're in supervision, you're a therapist, and also, you know, you're a person and you're trying to work out your identity as a therapist and how the person comes out there as well. And I think that's quite important, particularly in private practice. So I do enjoy that side of it. And I enjoy writing about therapy, and you know, I've really been quite quite excited, I suppose, over the last couple of years when I've just been doing a lot more of other things alongside my clinical work. And that's felt very rewarding as well.
And every time I've spoken to you before now, you're always so passionate about them all as well. Everything's kind of, you're really into it all, which is, I think it's fantastic. One of the things
that... get some hobbies, right? Is that what you're saying?
I'm the same. I totally understand workaholic. There's always a project on the go.
Yes, you're the same.
I am. So I can totally relate. It's probably why we got on so well, I think. talking about students, one of the things, and this was completely your idea, even though we do it together now, but you contacted me with the suggestion of setting something up on Twitter for students, which we eventually decided on the name or the hashtag trainee talk. For anyone who's listening, do you want to kind of maybe explain what that is and how people can get involved with that?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So, we've been running for, I don't know, what have been running for 3 months, two months? Three months, I think. Yeah. Basically it's a discussion for trainees. And we run it on Mondays, between 2 and 3. And Peter and I, generally are the facilitators. And what we'll do is we'll kind of take a subject or an area of interest within counselling and psychotherapy, probably very similar to things that people might already be thinking about in their training. But it's basically a space outside of the training room to meet other students from other courses and to just have a kind of an open discussion. Obviously, we don't talk about clinical material, but to be able to kind of, just in a very non-pressurized way, think about some questions around the subject. So depending on who's leading, Peter and I will lead on alternate weeks. We will set, maybe 5 or 6 questions for people to kind of start off with, but we also very happy for people to kind of put their own questions or ask us anything, or, you know, converse with the other students. I mean, we tend to find that sometimes, we talk about this, don't we, that sometimes the hour is a bit crazy. It's like super fast. And, what we do, I mean, this is part of, Peter's, Therapist Connect, group as well. So we tend to, retweet the responses with the hashtags Trainee Talk and Therapist Connect, which then enables anyone who can't join us for the hour to pick things up later by just putting those in the search engine. So we're kind of retweeting and then trying to answer people and making sure we haven't missed anyone. And it kind of often goes from being quite quiet and we're thinking, oh, is anyone turning up today? To suddenly everybody turning up and it becoming very, very fast paced. So, you know, I'm I like to think that I'm improving my typing skills. I don't know whether that's actually correct or not.
I'm definitely great at retweeting. I mean, I count myself a pro at that now because I just am so used to kind of doing it now. But I do find when the discussions are happening, actually, because it's only an hour, retweeting and answering questions and typing responses, it's so fast paced. You've got to be very kind of quick in your mind and your typing to kind of make sure you're covering everything and answering the questions properly as well. So it is a bit of a blur for about 55 minutes, I think, of that hour.
That's right. I think both of us go out for a walk after, don't we? But then we're really happy, and I think this has just happened very organically, that the rest of Therapist Connect kind of then join in the discussion after the hour. And what Peter and I will do is generally step back. We will just have the hour where we kind of comment on things. But we will continue to then retweet people who join in.
And it's been really nice, hasn't it? Some of the feedback we've had from students, and not necessarily people can't come necessarily every week, which is fine, but you can engage with it as much or as little as you want. And there's some students that maybe just observe the discussions and get a lot from that, whereas there's other people who actually get actively involved. And I think some of the specialist kind of facilitators we've had over the past few weeks have been good as well, where we looked at specific topics where you wouldn't necessarily get the opportunity on your course to ask those people, you know, specific questions. So it's been successful so far as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's really felt like it. I mean, it's been a very interesting initiative, I think. And you know, we didn't know how it was going to be. There was every chance that it might have just been a non-starter. So it's been great that it's been useful for people. And I think definitely mentioning the specialist sessions. We've had a couple so far, and the most recent one being Susan Cousins, who spoke on kind of racism and prejudice and microaggressions, and that's so interesting. And actually, that went on literally all week.
The discussion. It did.
Still Sunday night, and we're still getting responses. I'm not sure when this podcast is coming out, but the next one is actually going to be me. You obviously did yours on boundaries before, so I'm going to be talking a little bit about students who are thinking of going into private practice. And then we're going to have for our final one probably before we break for the summer, because we're going to kind of do the same as everyone will be doing in their training. Our final one will be with Dr. Deborah Lee and Janine Connor, who are both writers, both have books coming out or around now, and editors as well of journals and magazines in our profession. So that's going to be a really useful one and really interesting, I think, for people who are interested in writing and therapy.
It is, and I think it's going to be a bit of a unique opportunity, actually, to be able to ask some people with experience within writing within the therapy community some advice and tips around getting things published, kind of how you can develop your writing skills and stuff like that. So I think you're right. I think that's going to be a very interesting one for students, really. I'm looking forward to it. You briefly mentioned there about kind of support, and you're going to do your specialist session on students setting up in private practice. But you sit on the BACP private practice division, don't you, on the executive there. Can you just tell us a little bit about that work? Because there's been some exciting stuff going on with that recently, hasn't there?
Yes, there has. Yes. So, it's been a really exciting time. It's slightly threw everything up in the air with COVID, because we were working on this project, and the likelihood is it actually wouldn't have been launched now. It would have been launched later in the year. But we kind of recognised that private practitioners are in some way, you know, have been having a tough time, and so we wanted to kind of launch to help with what we had so far. But my whole reason, really, well, there were two reasons for me joining the executive. One is because, you know, I guess because of some of the things we've talked about today, I've had some frustrations as a therapist and wondering about, you know, where do I sit in terms of, you know, membership bodies and stuff like that. The way I see things is you either kind of walk away from something and think, right, okay, I'm just going to go somewhere else, or you get involved and you try and change things. And for me, the BACP does a lot of very good work. And I think that's really important to say.
Yeah.
There are some things, and obviously they are part of the culture and what it, you know, the things that we've talked about to do with the profession, and you can't ignore that. But they have a lot of good stuff, and they have really a lot of good people working. I mean, some of the people I work at kind of, you know, in membership and events, and, you know, I don't want to kind of miss anyone out, but, you know, those kind of levels of people doing the work. And a lot of them, you know, maybe aren't therapists themselves, and a lot of them really genuinely care. And, you know, it's quite known within BACP that there are some things like I'm skeptical. And, you know, it's quite nice for me to just be able to be myself within there, but to also say, you know, actually at the end of the day, there's 52,000 members here. And, you know, I think it's good to be able to try and provide something. So this is why I joined the private practice executive, because obviously this is my speciality area. And I had an idea of joining, which was that I wanted to deliver something like this. Interestingly, kind of about 6 months later, when I was trying to get it going with the division, we then found out that within BACP's own strategy, whatever they call it, program meeting, big thing that they have, they had also identified, membership had also identified this as a potential thing. Mm-hmm. So effectively we kind of had the same idea at the same time, which was really, really useful. And we spent a bit of time working out how can the division work with membership on this, how is that going to look, you know, how do we serve both our divisional members, but also make sure that we can get as much free material as we can to the membership as a whole, and to all those, you know, registered therapists who want to be able to do private practice. And I think, you know, tell me if you disagree with this, but one thing I feel is that because, well, students frankly have enough on their plates, but this, and there's so much to cover in courses, that there can sometimes be a little bit of a lack of talking about private practice in some courses.
I'd completely agree with that. And I think, you know, whatever stage of your career that you're at, you need the right up-to-date advice and guidance if you're deciding to set up in private practice. And I think just looking through some of the resources that I've seen that you've kind of put together, I think it's fantastic, actually, because it's a lot of things all in one place that people can kind of access when setting up, or even if you're in private practice, that I think would be really helpful to members, actually.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think the question is, you know, does this lie with training institutes, or does it lie with, you know, somebody after once people are qualified? And actually, I think probably both is true. But, you know, actually, if people can qualify and are supported in the right way, and I think this is very much the way we approach this project, is not telling you what to do.
Yeah.
Yes, there are things. If someone says to me, should I have a contract? I'd say, you know what?
Yes.
Really, it's a good idea to have a contract. So maybe on things like that, you know, it's kind of strong persuasion. But other than that, I think it's about allowing people on their journey to be able to really think about and reflect on themselves, and to use the documentation as a way of doing that, and as a way of self-learning. And if they need more help in certain areas, they can go in those certain areas. And you're right, we've kind of got the categories and stuff. There's going to be a whole bunch of new resources. I've kind of identified what's missing. I'm going to be writing a lot of those resources, and then some of them are going to be written in-house. So hopefully we're going to, you know, really cover all the areas that need to be covered.
Yeah.
And we're going to be taking feedback. I'm going to be running some small groups to make sure that we're kind of along the right lines, because we know that people need this. I mean, many years ago, I used to run a course called New to Private Practice. It was always sold out. It was always really successful because people were desperate for it. Mm. Of course, these days, there's absolutely loads of these courses running. So we know that it's something that can be of value to people. And I do think that it's important that people feel supported by their membership body, because it is very much also linked into the lack of jobs, because people may be going to private practice who wouldn't have necessarily considered it. So it's important that we all work together on that.
Well, I saw a statistic the other day that BACP tweeted that 30,000 of the members are in private practice or acknowledged that they're in private practice, which is obviously over half of the membership, which is a significant amount of people. So I think they need to provide some kind of resources, really, because there's absolute need out there. And I think you're right in what you're talking about there, in terms of even with education providers, you can give some guidance and some answers to some specific questions, but actually it's about practitioners kind of understanding and reflecting on how they want their private practice to be, what they want from it, and you know, their approach and things like that. So it's more a reflective process, but there are certain things that do have to be in place when you kind of set up in private practice, like the minimum requirements, if you like. But I think it's great, and I think there's so many of those resources that are free, aren't they, as for BACP members now. They can go on and they can access those.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, actually 80% of the current resources are free.
Brilliant.
So all you have to do is go on. I haven't got the actual, I should have had the website.
So okay, we can put a link. We can put a link to it when we.
Thank you. Peter's going to put a link. So click on that link, and then it's all there, and you can kind of we've got four sections. You can go into whatever sections, and you know, work at it at your pace. It might feel like there's a lot there, and there will be even more there, but that's fine. It's meant to be a kind of a gradual thing for people to work through.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. And talking about something else, which I think is really positive for counsellors and psychotherapists at the moment, is we've got National Counsellors Day coming up. Mm. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that? It's the second one. Am I right in saying it's the second, or is it the third?
It's the second one.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, this is obviously run by, CTUK Counsellors Together. It ran last year. I was very fortunate to be there at the first one, it ran in Lincoln last year. I think the purpose of it, I don't want to kind of speak for Maria here, but I think the purpose of it is, twofold. So first of all, to talk about some of the issues that we've touched on a little bit today, and obviously that fit with their, group's aims and mission statement and all that, but secondly to celebrate counsellors, I'm really happy to be involved this year, so I'm going to be acting as a compere.
Yeah,
like a, kind of a,
another string to your bow.
So it's going to be online again. Thank you to John and Sandra for taking it all online. I've got no idea really how it's going to run, because I haven't talked to anyone about technicalities yet. So hopefully someone's going to just say, just sit on Zoom and it will be fine. But we've got there's some fantastic speakers. I've seen a couple of the speakers before, like Elizabeth Cotton, who talks on some of the stuff about the profession, and she talks a lot on IAPT and about kind of unpaid work or difficulties for therapists. She's an absolutely brilliant speaker. I feel like there's some of them that I haven't seen, but Jo Watson I have seen before as well, and obviously she does all her kind of drop the disorder stuff, and then there's some people I haven't seen, so but it looks like it's going to be a really, really good day. And for me, you know, this is exactly what's needed. We need to celebrate ourselves. We really do, because every other profession will be, you know, celebrating themselves.
Yeah.
Why can't we? I think, you know, yes, we do incredibly serious work, And, you know, it's not about blowing our own trumpets or whatever, but, you know, about you know, helping people or whatever that might be. But there is something about, you know, actually this work is important work. It's incredibly important work. It's, you know, it's life-saving in all aspects of the word. And, you know, we need to, I think, as therapists, celebrate that and celebrate ourselves and kind of, also, you know, I think there's something about if we can't see ourselves and validate ourselves and say, this is what we do and this is why we're here, you know, how can we expect anyone on a nationwide level to us? Well, it, for me, it forms part of that. And, you know, and it's a good excuse to have cake. So.
Exactly. And I think it feeds into that whole idea of connecting with each other as well and recognizing and acknowledging the work that we all do. And I think it's another event that can help us bring us all together, really, and kind of, as you say, celebrate what we do and what we do well. And I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, is there?
Absolutely not. No. So you're going to be there?
I am. I'm definitely going to be there. I will be there with my piece of cake.
Yes, it's good.
So that kind of brings us to the end, really. But I suppose my last question is really, what is next on the cards for you? What are your kind of hopes for the future then, in terms of the profession, and what projects have you got on the go?
Well, I mean, as I say, hopes for the profession, just continual evolution. You know, lots of talking, lots of debates, lots of, you know, talking collaboratively. Yeah. Collaboration, I think, is a really big part of this. So, you know, I really want to be part of that. And I hope we can get things going and really make things work. I mean, this recent petition that has been put out in terms of, you know, utilising therapists in COVID, which I think has got over 10,000 signatures, that's a really good start to that. So I'm really hoping that it can work better for therapists and clients alike. And then for me, you know, I'm going to obviously be focusing a lot on this private practice project. So I expect that will kind of form a lot of this year, but I'm hoping, I'm very, very early stages, kind of thinking about a book, so I'm not gonna say much more about that at the moment. We're in early stages. I feel like, you know, this is I'm in a good place. I'm at kind of a good age, really, to have enough time left in my career to do lots of things. But I've got enough experience behind me to be able to explore some of those things. I am thinking at some point that I will be doing a PhD, and the likelihood is I will be doing probably something interdisciplinarian. So which, you know, kind of is important for me as well, because I feel like, you know, in my journey as a therapist, you know, I was working in a very, very different industry beforehand, a creative industry, and for me there's something about me being very, very integrated, and you know, there's things that I would like to look back at and bring into my life now and what I do now. So lots of exciting things, hopefully, and no pressure, just going along and continue to do my work and hopefully be useful for people.
I think there's no doubt about that, Kaz, about being useful. Sounds very exciting. I wish you the best of luck for the future. I'm saying that as if we're not going to see each other there. Yeah. But I'll be seeing you next week. But
yes, I'll speak to you tomorrow. Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you. Thanks a lot, Peter.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Therapist Connect podcast. Go to www.therapist-connect.com for more discussions and debates.